if we are, say we're in the vestiges of the purity culture and we're telling people that they shouldn't have any physical touch with members of the opposite gender, what we're telling them implicitly is that all touch is sexual.
Welcome to the Complicated Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah May, and this is a show all about exploring messy heart topics and the strategies we can use to seek healing in the pain and restoration in the ruins. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Complicated Heart Podcast. Today, I am very excited, and I know you all are as well because you all told me about it. But I have Lori Wilbert Ferguson with me, and she is the author of the book, Handle with Care, How Jesus Redeems the Power of Touch in Life and Ministry. And y'all, it is so good. It is linked in the show notes. You have got to get it and read it. Lori blogs at sayable.net, and she lives with her husband, Nathan, who she married when she was 34. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. Everybody was so excited when I said that I was going to be interviewing you. And of course, we're right in the middle of the sex series, so we're going to be talking about sex and singleness. So Lori, tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days. What are you doing?
Writing is a big chunk of it. I also teach writing, so that is a big part of my springs normally. So I teach a writing course, and yeah, that takes a good chunk of my time. I also edit on the side and then just write for various publications.
Yes. I didn't know you were teaching a writing course. I thought I did my due diligence in reading up on you, and I did not see that. Is it for a school or is it online?
No, it's online, actually. I teach it every spring. It's I call it the writing mentorship. And so basically, I am trying to help people become sort of their own best editors. I want them to learn how to self-edit and be frugal and careful with their words. And so it's a 9-week course.
That is so good. Where can people find that? I'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, you can find out about it on sayable.net. I do it every spring, and it's closed this spring, but I will do it again next spring.
All right, that sounds great. Yeah. Okay, well, as I said, we're going to be talking about sex and singleness. And the reason that I asked you is because I know that you have written pretty extensively on singleness, and you didn't get married until you were 34. And as I was reading through your book, oh my gosh, you go there with touch and all sorts of things that we don't tend to talk about or that we shy away from. And so I'm really grateful that you're willing to talk with us. So I'm just going to start real basic and ask you, what led you to wanting to write about touch?
I always tell this story, but I don't know a better way to tell it. But someone told me there's two kinds of people who write books. One is a person who is an expert and knows what they think about everything and wants everyone to think like they do. And the other kind of person is a person who doesn't know what they think about something and kind of wants to explore the topic. And so I was the latter. I think I got to marriage and I had never really, even though I had many, as we all do, experiences with touch, both good and bad, I had never given significant thought to it until I got married. And suddenly I was faced with this other human person with whom I was living and sharing, you know, every part of myself with. And there was conflict there that I just didn't understand and couldn't wrap my mind around. And so I just began to think about it more. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, man, we have really, both in the culture and in the church, we have really, I think, neglected. I think there historically there's a lot of theology on embodiment. I think more modern theology, contemporary theology, we talk a lot about the mind and the heart and the spirit, but we do not talk about the body very much. And
yeah,
I think we're seeing a turn in that. But I, you know, honestly, when I was writing this book, I did not have any resources from a Christian point of view on touch. And so my prayer is that it was just the beginning of a conversation, and it will lead into many, many more books that will be written by much wiser people than I am on this subject, because it's so important.
Yeah. Two things I just thought of as you were talking. The one is, and I don't know who quoted it, and I don't even know the quote, but it was the idea that I don't know if this is in the church or in the culture, but it's like the body being in the way of the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually, my literary agent said, we want our souls to mingle, but our bodies get in the way.
Yes. That is and like I was profound. Like,
that is, no, when I heard him say that, I was like, that is one of the most profound things I've ever thought about, because it's true. Yes. We do want our souls to mingle, but we think our bodies are in the way.
Yeah.
But the more that I thought about that, the more I thought, no, our bodies aren't actually in the way. God could have created us to just be, you know, bodiless souls, right, and spirits kind of floating above the earth, but he didn't. He created us out of dirt and bone and dust. And he, the very first act of God that we see with man is him touching man, forming. And I think that tells me that God thinks that embodiment and touching is very important.
Yes. And even what you were saying about the very first act of God touching man, it's fascinating, because when we read the story about Jesus healing the blind man, he could have just said, like, see, but he doesn't. He intimately, I mean, he touches the mud, but then he touches the man's eyes, like he's touching him. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought, like, why did he do that? And then I'm like, it is intimate.
Yeah.
One other thing real quick, when you were talking about marriage, how you began to think about touch in marriage, I really struggled a lot with, and I read this in your book too, you struggle with it a little bit too, or I think before you are married maybe, but with what, or no, your husband does. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
With like touch always leads to something sexual as opposed to just being able to touch and just enjoy the touch of it. And I know you were like starving for touch in your marriage because your husband had always seen it as like, if we touch, it's going to be a sexual thing.
Yep.
Something like that. Okay. I always thought I didn't like physical touch because it always was about sex. And I had so many sex issues in my marriage. Mm-hmm. And one time somebody said to me, I said, I don't like physical touch. And someone said, well, do you cuddle your kids? And I was like, oh my gosh, I love cuddling with my kids. And they're like, well, then you do like physical touch. That's not the issue. And it really made me step back and evaluate.
Yeah.
Whoa, I have totally had this unhealthy view that all touch is sexual, and except for like with my kids, but with my husband, there can be other touch. I know it sounds crazy, but that's how I had associated.
No, yeah. I think most of us think that way. Most of us are wired that way.
Yeah. And then it really makes you go, wait a minute. It's not that I don't like physical touch, because you hear that, well, women just don't like physical touch or whatever. And it's just not true. Yeah. It's just a different kind of touch.
Well, and I even think besides the fact of whether we want it or not, God, we were made for it. Mm. And so if we don't want it, what that tells me is that God has something he wants to heal in us.
1,000 yeses from me.
Yeah. So I think it's less about like preferences and more about what God made us to be and do and feel and be felt and all those things.
Ah, it's so good. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I just want to take a quick moment to let you know that this whole podcast developed because of a book I wrote called The Complicated Heart, Loving Even When It Hurts. And it's the story of how I learned to love and forgive my alcoholic mother, but really it's for anyone who has or is dealing with a difficult or dysfunctional relationship and is asking questions like, how do you forgive when the wound is still open? If you enjoy this podcast, I think you'll enjoy the book. The Complicated Heart can be found anywhere books are sold, and the link to it is in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Okay, before we jump into some more nitty-gritty questions with singleness, something stuck out to me in your book when you talked about how the neglect of self-care really ramped up physical issues for you. Mm-hmm. And we have this idea in the church that self-care is selfish. And I mean, it can go that direction, you know, but you really have learned a lot from that. And I would be curious to hear what physical issues came up for you. And then what have you learned about self-care and why it matters?
I mean, the physical issues are still even there, because I think when we neglect our bodies over a long period of time, it takes our bodies a long time to finally say, help me. And at that point, some of the issues are so deeply ingrained. But for me, it just came up like, it started in things just I talk about this more in the book, the reasons why I was neglecting to take care of my body had to do with some traumas that I'd walked through that really just put me in sort of flight, fright, freeze positions. And so yeah. I didn't want to move at all. Mm. And that ramped up, you know, weight gain, it ramped up, some like hormonal issues that I realized that my hormones are more stable when I'm caring for my body and hormones, as we know, as women, hormones are have so much to do with like the way that our bodies show up in the world and show up in our marriage and show up in just even with ourselves. And so our view of ourselves. So lots of physical issues in that sense. I think, I was going through an extremely, extremely stressful period of time for about 4 years there. And we miscarried. I don't even want to say the number because I think it overwhelms people, but we miscarried a lot of times. And I think in a lot of those ways, it was, I don't know totally. I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose what was the cause, but I do think a lot of it was related to stress. And I think, what have I learned about it? I think when I was writing this book, I started to see all these spaces where, so for instance, here's a couple examples, love your neighbor as yourself. So we always talk about loving our neighbors. We never talk about loving ourselves. And if we do, we're very uncomfortable with that idea in the church. When Jesus is talking about fasting, you know, he says fast, but then he also says, wash your face and hand, wash your hair, you know, take care of yourself while you're fasting. So your spiritual body is being formed, but your physical body still matters. I think, and this was the one that surprised me the most when I was reading in Ephesians, where Paul is speaking to men and women about marriage. He says to men, nourish and care for your wife's body as you do your own. And I thought, well, we never talk about that. We never talk about how important it is and how a man cannot nourish and care for his wife's body if he is not nourishing and caring for his own. And I just thought, how much is that the root of so many broken marriages and issues within marriage, because we are not caring for our own bodies and the traumas that we've walked through and the fears that we carry. And, we're not caring for our bodies. And I'm not talking about like primping and preening care. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about caring for our bodies as created things, with complicated stories. And once we begin to care for those things, we can then care for others in good and proper whole ways. So I know that's a little bit, I'm distilling that down a lot, but that's kind of the main things that I learned.
No, I love it. And I love how you talk about touch is so important in self-care. Mm-hmm. Like you talk about rubbing the lotion on your body or your face, or, you know, just taking the time and, just touching our own bodies.
Yeah, Bessel van der Kolk, The Body Keeps the Score. He talks about the importance of feeling our substance. Mm. And I love that idea just as Christians, because I just think I need to remember I am a made thing. I am a created thing and I'm not the creator. And it helps me to remember my substance, remember that I am matter, remember that I matter. And remember that God was the first one to touch man. And so it's okay for me to touch me.
I love that. Oh my gosh, you're such a poet. Just the way you talk. I just love it. Okay. So let's talk specifically now about singleness and sex. So I want to, but I don't just mean sex. I mean, even touch. I mean, even intimacy. You know, what does this look like as we're single? You know, when you're single. And so let's start here. When it comes to singleness and touch, because you said something in your book that I shamefully did not actually consider. And it's probably because I got married so young. But you talk about how some of the loneliest people are singles in the church, because there are some of the most touch deprived people in the church are singles, because where are they supposed to get this physical affection? especially as you get older. Mm-hmm. And it really made me think about how I treat, you know, single people, you know, in my church and how I want to go forward after reading your book. But when it comes to singleness and touch in the church, what have you learned and who should be initiating touch and how can it be done thoughtfully? And actually, before you even say that, would you tell that story of the woman who felt so deprived of touch that you tell in the beginning of your book? Okay.
Yeah. And this isn't my story. This is a story that Pastor John Piper shared years and years ago, and it stuck out to me so potently. I would say it was the seed of Handle with Care. Mm. He talked about this woman who she would continually cut herself so that she would go to the hospital, and he would visit her time after time. And he finally, after dozens of times visiting her there, she was an older single woman, unmarried woman. I don't know whether she was widowed or single or elderly. I don't know. But he went in and he said, "Why? Just, I don't understand why you keep doing this. Like, what is it that we need to help you with?" And she said, "This breaks my heart." She said, "I like it when they touch me." Mm. She would cut her body so that she could go into the hospital so that she would be touched. Mm. And Pastor Piper ends that story just saying, "God, make me a good, pure, pastoral, ministering hugger." And I think that is just such a lesson for all of us. There are so many people in the world who aren't being touched. And I think singles, elderly, people with disabilities, we can just be very standoffish toward those people. And I think in a lot of ways we're standoffish because we don't know what to do. We feel awkward, or we feel we don't want to be, you know, misunderstood. And so it's hard. But I think the onus is on, so I say in the book, the onus is not on the marginalized in those moments to come close and touch. The onus is on those in the majority. And that for us in the world today, in the church specifically, it is married people. And so I think there are many ways it can be initiated. And I'm really careful in the book to not give prescriptive answers to things, because I think that it's important that we are paying attention to our own story, and we're paying attention to the story of the person in front of us, not to sort of legalistic rules. Mm-hmm. But I think your question, who should initiate touch and how can it be done thoughtfully? I think for me and for my husband, the way it works is that the young men and women in our lives who are single, we ask often, you know, when was the last time you were hugged? But we also hug often. And I'm particularly the people who are in our lives. We don't ask them, "Can I hug you?" My friends walk in the door and my husband, you know, my female friends walk in the door and my husband hugs them. Our male friends walk in the door and I hug them. That is, that's an assumed posture in the Wilbert home, that when you walk in, you will be hugged by both a man and a woman, and you will have a good, appropriate, tight hug. Because we just know that it's so important. And we've heard time and time again from the singles who come through our home how much that ministers to them. Or even things like holding hands when we pray. We had a young man live with us for a couple of years, and he said to me a couple weeks ago, he said, "You know, one of the things I miss most about living there is that we would always hold hands when we prayed." Mm. And I just thought, man, that's just like such a small thing. And it really matters. It really matters. There's a lot of like sharp edges for singles around touch. And it oftentimes comes out sideways, and looking for touch from outside marriage, or using self-touch inappropriately or sinfully. And man, I just think, man, if it could be initiated by others in thoughtful, holy, good ways, I wonder if those edges would be a little bit softer.
Mm.
I think they would have been for me.
It just makes me want to weep. Like when I think about I'll tell you, when you said in your book, you said what I wanted most of all was to be touched. Yeah, you said it's around touch that an unmarried person can feel the most forgotten. Yeah. And it just makes me so sad that I have not been somebody who's opened my eyes to that. And I think it's because I don't know if we're taught this, I don't know what it is, but we're so afraid of lust.
Yeah. Well, we equate intimacy. We equate being felt.
Yes.
To sin. We equate intimacy to eroticness. We equate being felt by someone to sinning, unless it's in marriage. And I just think that's a really, really wrong. And I think that's just the church has, like I said, placed such an emphasis on like our hearts and sort of these intangible things.
Yeah.
We don't spend a lot of time thinking about bodies and embodiment and matter and feeling felt. It's not sinful to feel felt.
Yeah, that's good. It's not sinful to feel felt. That's so good. Ooh, I love, you said something in your book about we don't do side hugs. In our house.
Funny. We don't. I mean, we don't do side hugs. You know, we walk into church and we don't do side hugs there either. And I think that's, you know, that's culturally different.
Yeah.
That's not normal. And so it's something you have to learn.
You have inspired me so much. I mean, literally I was making a mental list in my head and I was like, oh, these are all the people I'm going to give a good 8 second, like endorphin releasing hug to.
Yes.
Endorphin.
No, endorphin. No, that's that's an important point that you're bringing up, because being hugged for 8 to 10 seconds releases these like really healthy, good endorphins in our bodies. It does something physiologically to us that nothing else can do in the same way. And if you think about it, if unmarried people aren't receiving that, they're not, that's so important for them to receive. It's so important. They're not less important than we are. And we shouldn't treat them like it. And so we need to be willing to step up and give that to them.
Yeah. And I was even just thinking about our kids or the teenagers that we're around. Like, they're easy to forget when the teenage daughter gets awkward or something. Like, I can remember when, like, I would go around my house to my teen daughter and I'd be hugging her and I'm like, don't move. I'm going to hug you for 8 seconds, 8 seconds. We're bonding. And she's like, always like, oh, mom. But I'm like, I know this is good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yes, there's a line of like, can I hug you, you know, as they get older and things like that. But it's so important that dads are hugging their daughters if their daughters are comfortable, and moms are hugging their sons and dads are hugging their sons, and the whole thing, just, we need touch. Yeah. We're made for it.
We also need, though, and I'm glad you hit on this, like asking for it as they get older.
Yeah.
One of the things I mentioned today is that I was forced into some touch when I was younger, as a younger girl. And I remember feeling like I had no choice in the matter. Like I had to be hugged, or I had to have my neck kissed. I hate that. I had to be tickled. And or I was a bad daughter or a bad sister or bad granddaughter if I didn't. And I think one of the things that's really important for all children at all ages to understand is that that so much of life is a risk. So much of life and vulnerability is risky. We don't know the outcome, but also they have authority and autonomy over their bodies.
That's good. Yes.
And so, even from a young age, I'm really careful, like even with little ones who are in our home group or something, to say, hey, can I give you a hug before I hug them? Because that is really important that they say yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
That's so good. We always taught our kids too, even from a young age.
Yeah.
You don't have to hug anybody you don't want to. So like, you know how people are like, well, why aren't you hugging your uncle or your whatever? And we always taught our kids like, if you don't have to, if you don't want to, but that's so good. I'm glad that you said that. So let me just ask you this question, even though I think we touched on it, but I still think it's important to just straight up ask it is, would you say that it's appropriate for a married woman, let's say, to give a good tight hug to a single guy or vice versa? Or would you ask first? And I'm thinking of situations like you're not close friends, but you're acquaintances in church, but you know they're single. Like, talk to me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's hard to give a blanket answer again, because like I said, that married woman has a story, and that young single guy has a story. And so I think, you know, I'm thinking of three different young men in my life. One struggles with same-sex attraction. And he, man, when he comes over, he wants a good hug. Yeah. He just wants to be hugged. Enveloped. Yes, he wants to be enveloped. And then we've got another, you know, guy friend who, you know, he really struggles with front hugs. And so I want to honor him and respect him. And so I'm careful to give him, like, you know, a hug that he feels appropriate with, that he feels comfortable with. So my emphasis is always on how do I care for the person in front of me? Mm. Not how are they thinking about me or how are they, you know, feeling uncomfortable with me. So I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about them. So how can I care for this person? And sometimes caring for that person means giving them a handshake. And sometimes caring for that person means like giving them a good tight hug. Yeah. So we don't want to sin. We don't want to sin. And sin is sexual activity outside of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But a hug is not sexual activity outside of marriage. So we can consider that person and how to handle that person with care.
Yeah.
But ask. If we don't know, just ask. Just I think ask so many times good. We're just afraid of awkward questions. But man, I would much rather prefer an awkward question than to be offending or hurting or causing someone to stumble.
Yeah, I think that's great because you even brought up, when I think of singles, I think of like the, you know, 30-year-old woman or the 30-year-old guy and not the elderly or not maybe somebody who is has a disability and is also single and, you know, or, and how you were saying, like, make sure they're getting physical touch and ask them. And I just, man, you've really opened up my eyes in a lot of ways. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Mm.
So when it comes to a single person being in a relationship, you talk a lot about this in your book about the relationships that you were in and physical stuff that went on in your relationships. And you said something interesting. You said you always thought that it was mutually exclusive to be both affectionate and spirit-led, or to be affectionate in a relationship and spirit-led. And I think that's actually a big tension for singles who are dating, is what is the appropriate level of touch? How can we be affectionate and receive that kind of touch, affectionate touch, and still be spirit-led or not be, I don't know, easily falling into sin, right? Because the trajectory of the conservative church is like, if you hold hands, then you're going to move those hands elsewhere and blah, blah, blah. So like, give us your thoughts and wisdom and how can you be both affectionate in relationships and spirit-led?
Well, I think it's really important to make sure that we're, and this is probably backing way up from a 30,000 foot view, but like actually making sure when we're talking about purity or we're talking about walking in purity in relationships, to make sure that we're talking to people who actually are believers, and that because I think if you're talking to a believer and the Holy Spirit lives inside of them, it looks totally different than a person who is not a believer and is just trying to sort of live according to a prescribed rule. There is going to be sin, you know, possibly in both relationships, but one is going to feel like the comfort and conviction of the Spirit, and the other is going to be just trying to jump through a hoop. And
I love how you just said comfort and conviction of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Sorry, that just goes together so beautifully. We always think condemnation when we mess up instead of comfort and conviction. Go ahead.
No, that's good. I think that's so important because there is, I think within a spirit-led relationship with among two people who the Spirit is inhabiting their lives and their hearts and bodies and decisions and all of those things, there can be physical touch. And sometimes that physical touch may cross boundaries that we would say, that probably wasn't wise. But there's almost a guarantee that person's probably going to feel conviction about it. And if they don't feel conviction about it, then I think you need to back way up and say, you know, this isn't about the relationship. This isn't about, you know, what line has been crossed or not crossed. Let's talk about your heart. Let's talk about, like, do you believe Jesus is real? Do you believe that the Father loves you? Do you have, like, are you confessing and repenting of your sin? And if they're not, then they're not someone who's walking by the Spirit. And so I don't think we can expect them to walk by the Spirit.
Oh, completely. Totally.
So I just think it's assumed. It's assumed so much that people are, you know, you go to church, you're part of a small group and you're dating someone and having sex every other night. people are like, well, they're, you know, they just keep stumbling. And I'm like, well, I just want to talk about like, is your heart regenerated? Because it's not about having sex every other night. It's about, you know, what's going on in your heart there.
That's really good. That's good. Okay. Well, let me just, in addition to that, let me just ask this question. I know you're not prescriptive and there's not formulas, and I'm grateful for that. But how did you learn that you could be appropriately affectionate? Like, what did that look like for you? Because I know there are single people listening, especially I lead a youth group and I have ninth grade girls, and they're all asking these questions. You know, what have you found about how, like, without being like, well, here's a line and here's this and here's that, but like what?
No, I think the switch flipped for me when I realized these are my brothers. Before, they're potential husbands or boyfriends or even just like not interested in that person. Therefore, I won't give him my time or energy or hug. When I began to sort of flatten that curve and treat all men like my brothers. So everyone from my pastors to the young men in our small group to the children, the male children, the female children in our small group. These are my brothers and my sisters. That's going to change the way that I'm affectionate with them, because I'm going to be affectionate with them with my mind set on the fact that we are part of the family of God, and not that we are, you know, primarily sexual beings practicing sexual things.
Yeah.
Primarily, we're brothers and sisters practicing familial things.
I think that's fantastic advice. Let's talk about masturbation.
Okay.
I want to give everybody some context. I'm going to read an excerpt from your book. But first I want to say, so in her book, she does talk about this. She has a whole chapter on self-touch. And one of the things that comes up, of course, when you're single is masturbation. And we don't really like to talk about that. Or it's like, it's just all, it's a tricky thing. And I love how you're like, I really don't know the answer. Yeah. So let me just say this. So in it, her and her husband are driving and they're having this conversation about self-touch and masturbation. And she challenges her husband. She says, for 45 minutes, do not obey your body's inclination, desire, or felt need for comfort. And that could be moving like a hair out of your face or an itch or something like that. And she said he didn't even last 5 minutes. And then here's what she goes on to say. Our bodies constantly send us signals about our desires for comfort, help, pleasure, or even medical attention. We are wired by God to pay attention to and care for our bodies. We are knit from conception to move ourselves into comfortable positions, to flinch from pain, and to seek comfort. As we grow, we learn to run from bees and instinctively touch the place where they sting us. We hide from adults who scare us. We learn not to touch the red eye on the stove. And if we happen to do this accidentally, we feel pain and seek to relieve it with ice or ointment. We feel discomfort from old injuries and seek healing or at least respite from them. When we are hungry, we find food. We buy pillows designed for back, side, or belly sleeping, whichever our preference is. We live in a sin-wrecked world with sin-wrecked problems, and comfort is not just a preference, it's a biological instinct, one we're not guaranteed to get while on earth, but one which we'll keep seeking whether we live in a prison cell or a palace. Yes, our ultimate comfort should be found in God alone, but God also built us with physical desires and solutions for comfort that aren't always wrong. When I read that, I was like, why have I not thought of that? Meaning, like, you take something so obvious, which is when you have a scratch or an itch on your arm, like you go and you itch it, or when, you know, whatever, like we have this instinct to relieve what is calling to us or what is hurting or what is whatever it is. And we have this when it comes to the sexual part of us. Mm-hmm. And so will you, I just loved how you prefaced it. And I know you don't have an answer, but will you still talk to us a little bit, walk us through masturbation? Like, is it ever okay? What does that mean to scratch the itch? Like, you know, like, just talk to us about it. Because I know people are asking these questions. I mean, they're singles listening. They're like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I think, so for me, so let's talk about, for instance, let's talk about someone who gets a bee sting and puts their hand on that space, mm-hmm. and then runs to get some ointment to put on it, and care for it. There's a reason that they're seeking out comfort. There's a reason they're seeking out, you know, an ice cube or some baking soda and water or some honey. My mom used to put honey on bee stings. I don't know if that works, but she used to do that. So there's a reason for that. Why? Because it's hurting, because something happened, that is sort of triggering that pain, that feeling that of discomfort. And so it's helpful for me to think about masturbation, specifically masturbation. And I'll get into whether we should do it or not in a second, but it's helpful for me to think about masturbation and I'm going to say this, the desire for sexual gratification or comfort, or in layman's terms, an orgasm. Mm-hmm. The desire for that is coming from something. And perhaps it's triggered by, you know, a thought or a vision or a fantasy or something like that. But there's something even deeper underneath that, mm-hmm. that I think, and I can't say what it is. I don't know.
And I just want to add real quick, hormones too. Because quite frankly,
yes.
You know, I mean, when women ovulate, like things get a little, you know.
I mean, that's a big part of it, particularly for female.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be totally different. And I think for so long, the masturbation conversation has been driven by men. And so it's primarily about pornography and mm-hmm. guarding your eyes and those kind of things. For women, it is very, very dependent on their hormones. And so when I have a friend who's struggling with masturbation, or she's like, man, I messed up. Mm. I just ask, hey, what time of the month is it? And she tells me, and you know what it does for her? It helps her just give herself grace, because she's like, okay, I want to repent for, you know, if I sinned during that act by putting my vision on something that wasn't God, but I also want to be like patient with my body and just like understand my body is hungry for something. It's looking for the balm to put on the bee sting. And so it's helpful for me to think about it in that. And then when it comes to like, well, should we do it or not? I can't answer that question. And it's not because I don't have a personal answer to that question. I can't answer that question because I don't know who's asking it. And I don't mean like who is the demographic who's asking it. I know everyone wants to know.
The individual person in the story.
Yeah. I don't know what their story is. And I don't know what, you know, magnificent pains are happening in their lives that they are seeking comfort from. I don't know what things they're trying to avoid. I don't know what areas of their body they aren't caring for properly. And so their hormones are out of whack. I don't know. And so I think it's helpful for me just to, and in my conversations with my friends, to just ask a lot of questions and not have a lot of answers for them, but to help them kind of sort of self-discover what's going on for them in those moments.
Yeah.
And then how do we think about it biblically? I compare it. So I say in the book, you know, the Bible doesn't really have prescriptive words to say about masturbation. Particularly, I think when we're talking about masturbation that is specifically driven by pornography or by sinful fantasies and things like that, I think we can be pretty clear and say that's not good. That's sin. But when it comes to just like seeking comfort, it's harder to, I don't think the Bible is super clear about it. However, the Bible is clear about fasting. And so I talk about long seasons of fasting from sexual intimacy or sexual gratification as a period of fasting. And that is a helpful way of thinking about it for me, because I know when I'm fasting from something, whether it's an orgasm or sex or bread or sugar, those like feelings, those hunger pangs that I get, I call them in the book, they're there to point me to a better feast. Mm. They're there to say, I have better food for you. And so when I'm single and I'm practicing fasting from sexual intimacy or sexual gratification, and I feel those hunger pangs, feel those moments where I'm like, I just need this comfort right now. It's there to point me to the fact that God has a better feast for me. And it's not as we might think. It's not necessarily sex someday. It's consummation with Him, and it's a feast with Him, and it's eternity with Him. So all of those things are pointing us to something that's better, and it's just helpful for me to think about it that way. So again, I'm not going to give like a solid yes, always right, always wrong. I'm not going to do that because I think it's deeper. It's more complicated. I also think that it's I think it can be profoundly healing to instead of pretending that we don't struggle with something or pretending it's not that we don't feel conviction about it. I think it can be profoundly helpful to look at the thing itself and try and figure out what God's teaching us or wants to heal in us or does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. And I think you're right. I think there's not a prescription. And I think that we do need to listen to our bodies and we do need to be before the Lord. And, and it's just something that keeps us dependent on the Lord because there is quite frankly a tension there.
I
remember saying to a friend of mine, this was a few years ago, but I remember saying like, well, I mean, if you have an itch, scratch it in regards to masturbation. Like if it's hormonal and you just are like, you just need to like deal with it. And then she said, but it's important to remember that studies show that the more you masturbate, the more addictive it becomes. And I thought that was so fascinating. And so I'm not giving an answer either. I'm just saying there's so much to think about and there's tension.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think the science of it is really important for people to understand these days. Because like you said, the more you do it, the more you do it. And it actually is rewiring your brain. There's been all kinds of studies that have come out in recent years about men who can't get an erection or women who just can't orgasm unless they are doing it themselves because they... So basically it's happening by themselves. There's a lack of intimacy with another person because they grew so accustomed to it. And so we actually have to rewire our brains when we get to marriage, if we have had a habit of that, because what happens is, if you're a guy and you're masturbating or you're a girl and you're masturbating, that's always going to lead to, you're going to keep at it until you orgasm, when you're by yourself. But that doesn't happen in marriage. Like sometimes, I would say often, probably for many of us, we have sex and there isn't an orgasm. It's still really enjoyable. It's really good. Sometimes it's just not happening. And sometimes that's hormonal. Sometimes it's time. Sometimes we're tired, whatever. But I think if you are constantly...
That's a really good point. I never thought of actually.
Yeah. I think if you're just constantly programming your mind to get the thing you want and you get to marriage, you can be really disappointed.
That's really good. I hadn't even thought about that. And it's so true. Well, I appreciate you speaking on that and being willing to talk about it. And I just think people have to stay before the Lord and in the way that we just talked about how it can become addictive, it's not like an itch. Because an itch you can actually scratch and then stop.
But some can't. Think about like poison ivy.
That's true. Poison ivy actually came in my mind as soon as I said that. That's funny. You said
that. Yeah, there's some itches that you can't. You're just instinctively kind of going for it. So,
or the bug bite that you know you shouldn't itch because it'll itch more, but you can't stop until you're bleeding. Yeah, that's good. Just a lot to think about. And it's good that we do that. It keeps us dependent on the Lord. I always find whenever there's something where I have tension and I don't have a black and white answer, it just keeps me before the Lord.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. I think that's one of the reasons I was very firm, because I was pushed to give, you know, a more firm answer in these matters, in this section in particular. And I would not, because I think it robs people of their need to go to the Lord and to be led by the Spirit and to let the Father heal the things that He needs to heal. And I don't want to be lazy.
I love that. That's so good. Okay. I debated whether or not I was going to ask you this question, but I think I'm going to, because I think that if there are single women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50, whatever, that they may experience this. So You tell a story in your book. I'll just read a tiny, tiny little paragraph of it. You say, in my late 20s and on into my 30s, woman after woman after woman would come to me in tears, confessing that what they thought was healthy physical touch among same gender friends had turned into something strangely sexual. And now many of them wondered if they were lesbians. They were all saying many of the same things. We were just watching a movie and then we were just scratching each other's back. And then, you know, all of that. And the question I have is, and I think some of the preface of that too, is that you had said we'd learned so much not to have any kind of affectionate mm-hmm. touch with the other gender. And so they would get any of their physical affection from each other. Mm-hmm. And then they're starting to wonder, like, am I same-sex attracted? Talk us about that a little bit and what you have learned on gendered touch.
Yeah. So if we are, say we're in the vestiges of the purity culture and we're telling people that they shouldn't have any physical touch with members of the opposite gender, what we're telling them implicitly is that all touch is sexual. Mm-hmm. And so when they do experience touch with someone of their own gender or someone in a platonic relationship, it's very difficult to separate any touch from the idea of it being sexual touch. Mm. And so when you have, what I just began to see was that all these girls and women were experiencing intimate, I think in some ways it began as healthy, familial touch. And when they began to experience that, they immediately, their minds went to sexual touch because they felt, again, they felt, and we equate feeling felt with illicit touch. And so really, I think it takes backing up from that and just, again, asking a lot of questions like what was going through your mind when that happened? How do you feel about what happened? And just kind of exploring what was going on there and helping them to sort of walk back, from the cliff a little bit. And I want to be clear and say that many people do have same-sex attraction, and that is mm-hmm. a real thing. And we need to handle that very tenderly and very carefully. We need to love people who are walking through that and struggling to figure out which way is up. And we want to be really tender with our brothers and sisters who are experiencing that.
Yes.
But if this is someone who doesn't have that and is just confused because something just happened, I think we just need to ask questions. I mean, we've all done things where we're like, I just don't know what happened. I was just doing this and then suddenly this. And what we need in that moment is for someone to sit down with us and just care for our hearts and ask us good questions. And because I think many times for many of us, we can think that we've already fallen off a cliff when in reality we are, still 10 feet from the edge. And yeah. We just need to kind of back up and just see things truthfully and rightfully. And I just want to say, like, I've seen God redeem, some really beautiful stories have come out of, I'm thinking of four of those girls in particular right now who have had just, beautiful stories come out, and not all of them. When I say beautiful, I don't want you to hear that I'm saying they all got married and lived happily ever after. A couple of them did. Some of them are still single, but just the awareness and the healing that God did in their lives when they finally took a good hard look at what they were longing for, what they were feeling, what they wanted, has been really powerful to watch.
Mm. So I love what you're saying about how if somebody comes to you and they're experiencing these things and, asking questions and being tender and all of those things. But I want to back up to something you said, a lot of times if you're raised in a culture where mm-hmm. There shouldn't be any gendered touch or opposite gender touch or whatever. So what is the solution there? I say solution, but what I'm saying. Like, what is
the... Yeah, I think the solution is the same as when we talked about initiating touch and giving good hugs. It's how do we care for the person in front of us? And so, like, let's stop and think about them instead of thinking about what do I want most in this moment, or what is comforting me, or what am I hungry for, or what am I lusting after? Instead, say, like, how can I actually truly love and care for the person in front of me? And that's really hard to do. And I don't think very many of us do that super well. We are self-protective people. We are controlling people. We want to control the narrative. We want to control the outcomes. And so we don't oftentimes just stop and just look at the person in front of us and try to care for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good.
I do think that it's complicated though. I can't give a broad brush answer on gender touch. I tell a story in the book about a mother who, you know, she was instructing her sons, her teenage sons, always give side hugs because you never know what's going through a girl's mind and you don't want to give them the wrong impression. And I came back later to her and I just said, hey, I just want to encourage you. Like, you're their mom. You know how to parent them best, but I want to encourage you. What you're teaching them is that what boys do with their bodies controls the outcome. By giving them a side hug, they're therefore controlling the outcome that these girls won't get, you know,
lustful or something. Expectations, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Expectations. Yeah. Of what's going to happen. And no one can do that. We cannot control the outcome. We have to be faithful to what God's asking us to do.
That's a great point. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. So I just think training our children from young age to not control the outcome, but just to be faithful to what's right.
Oh, that is so good. I'm trying to write that down in a nice, sweet quote because I love that.
We actually have, I'll just plug it right now. We actually have that's kind of our family motto. I don't know if that's what you call it, but we have a print hanging in our home that says fidelity to the word of God and not to an outcome. I actually have that print available on sayable.net so people can download
it. I'm writing down to put a link to that. So the it's a print, you said.
Yeah, it's called the fidelity poster.
Oh my gosh, I'm totally gonna
because
get
it's
that.
So important. And this is like so important in every aspect of our lives, but
that is excellent. And it's so true. That is all we can do. We can only be faithful. That's it. Yeah. It's so good. Okay, I want to talk for just a minute on the gospel and singleness. And I read something. I don't think this was in your book, actually. I read this on an article you wrote, maybe for the Gospel Coalition. I don't know. But you say, for 34 years, I believed that since marriage was a picture of the gospel, there must be some mysterious element of the gospel I would never understand unless I was married. How do we see the gospel in singleness?
Well, I think, I don't remember what article that came from, but I think that the argument that I make is that in some way, all of us as Christians who are here in this sort of, you know, the already not yet part of the world, we are all single. We are all waiting for the consummation with our groom. We are groaning for the kingdom to come. And so In just as marriage is an illustration of the gospel, sort of the culmination of the gospel, this mysterious relationship between Christ and his bride, singleness is a picture that all of us can identify with. Because, man, I don't know about you, but I feel that groan in me so many times. And I am married where I'm like, man, I just, come Jesus, come. And I hear that same groan in many of my single sisters who are like, where is he? Come. Yeah. Like about, you know, a spouse someday. And so I think we should all, we should identify a lot more with our single brothers and sisters than we do in the church.
All right. As we wrap up, I just have two last questions for you. And here's the first one. Mm-hmm. What do you want to say to the woman who was abused, specifically sexually abused, and she cannot imagine how touch could be good? What do you want to say to her?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have the afterword in the book is written to that woman. So I would hope that she would make sure that, you know, and I almost wish it was like a foreword to the book, but I would encourage her to go read that. But I think my answer to that is this. I think the key word in that question is imagine. Like it's our bodies that were harmed and our bodies remember. And so we almost have to use our bodies in the practice of being healed and not our imaginations. So I think much continual harm can come because we are just continuing to imagine. We either were imagining the harm that was done against us again, we're remembering it, or we're just imagining future harm. And so I think that it's so important for us to heal our bodies. The memory resides in our imagination, but it needs to be healed in our bodies. And I actually don't think that starts with letting ourselves be touched by another person. So I want to be really careful to not say, so you just need to go do the thing with your body that you, I don't think that that's the way that it goes. I think it starts by practicing being in our bodies. So breathing, yes. Stretching, using self-touch in Godward ways. So we want to partner with God in the healing of our bodies. And I think that takes a really long time and we have to be really patient. Yes. But I think so much of it is it's, you know, Bessel van der Kolk talks about just our, you know, the trauma being stored in our bodies and keeping score of that trauma. And so how do we sort of heal that? And I think maybe for some people, they've never experienced a physical or sexual abuse. And so for them, they think practices like, Christian yoga are unnecessary, but I think for someone who has experienced abuse, some sort of embodiment practice can be really, really helpful. I also think, and I know you've interviewed Andy on this, on EMDR can be really, really helpful.
Yes.
Because I think it's the imagining, again, it's the imagining that is where that sort of trigger happens. And so we want to start to heal those brain, you know, synapses and all those things, and partner with God in the healing. So does that answer? I want to be careful with that question because I think it's a hard one. But
yeah, I think it's really good. One of the things that I've learned over the last year specifically is to befriend and bless my body.
Yes.
Because often we feel like our bodies are betraying us.
Yes. Yeah. So
because of harm done.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I started about 2 years ago. I started praying for my body from my toes up to my head. And so I would just, and what this would do is it would accomplish two things. One, it would make me aware of my body. So as I'm praying for my toes, as I'm praying for my, the arch of my foot, the heel of my foot, my ankle, my calf, it makes me very aware of that part of my body, which is a really good healing practice for us.
Yes.
But it also accomplished the fact that I'm communing with God and as I'm praying for each of these parts of my body, I'm imagining God healing them. And I think that is a really path. Whether we feel the healing fully while we're on earth or not, God is healing. He is healing.
Yes, he is. That's right.
And so it helps me to just remember and almost feel him healing.
That's wonderful. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Dan Allender.
Yes.
I like him very much. And he talks about something that I had to learn how to embrace that was very difficult. And he says, bless the parts of your body that you felt like you hated because let's say you were abused, but your body responded in the way that it was made to respond sexually, even though you may have hated something.
Yes.
Learning to bless our bodies and to say, God, thank you that you made my body to respond in this way. And that it in no way makes me at fault or that I wanted whatever. But that I have a good body.
Yeah, my body works.
And my body works.
Yeah.
And that was so hard, but also so good because I just want to praise God that he gave me a good body that maybe somebody did not treat rightly, but it doesn't make my body any less good.
Yeah. The very first thing God says about men and women, he doesn't say just good. He says very good.
Very good. And our bodies are fearfully and wonderfully made.
Yeah.
So that's good. All right, last question, my friend. This has been really wonderful. Mm. I'm so, so grateful for you.
Thanks.
What do you want to say to the single woman or single teen or single, I never thought about this, but somebody brought up what happens when your husband divorces you or your husband dies and then mm-hmm. you're single. Nobody talks mm-hmm. about the older single woman. So what do you want to say to mm-hmm. the single woman out there who is aching for touch and could just use some hope? What do you want to say to her?
I think, and I've been a part of this narrative in the past, and I really lament it. I think there's been a narrative in the conservative church that we don't need anyone but God.
Yes, and I agree with you.
The second thing that God says about the man that he created is that it was not good that he was alone.
Right.
And so the very first thing that was disordered in this beautiful creation that God made was that someone was alone.
Oh, that's good.
And so I just want to say to that single person, that unmarried person or single person, what you desire is good. Mm-hmm. And God made you to desire that. He also made that to be fulfilled for you. And he might not have made that to be fulfilled in a spouse or in children, but he made that to be fulfilled. And so I can't tell you where you're going to find that. I don't know where you're going to find it, but I just would say, acknowledge that your desire is good. Acknowledge that God made you to want it and to need it. Because you do need more than God. You need people.
Yes.
And that's okay. It's really okay.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lori. Mm-hmm. You are such a gift to us. And everybody listening, please, I am telling you, you have got to get her book, Handle with Care. Even that title, Handle with Care. Ugh, I just love it. How Jesus Redeems the Power of Touch in Life and Ministry. It is so, so good. There will be a link to the book in the show notes. I will also have links to Lori's course, if I can find it on her site, but there will be links to sable.net and also to the print, the fidelity poster that she talked about. So, and also Lori, where can people find you on social? Like, are you a Twitter person, an Instagram person, Facebook? Like, where's your main hub?
Main hub is probably Instagram.
Okay.
But I'm also on Twitter at Lori Wilbert, and it's Lore Wilbert, Wilbert.
Great. Both Instagram and Twitter are that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. I will make sure those are linked in the show notes. Thank you so much, friend, for being willing to do this interview.
And thanks for doing this series. I love that you're doing it.
I'm really grateful. I've been hearing a lot of feedback, and I just think it's something we have to keep talking about. So
good.
Thank you for listening to the Complicated Heart Podcast. If you like this podcast, if you found it helpful, please take a minute to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Reviews are how people know if they should listen or not, so your review matters. Thank you so much. If you want to know more, check out thecomplicatedheartpodcast.com.